Be dangerous with love and call 516-620-3602. Ask for the Staten Island Project for $100. Save a life today.
Hi, I'm Leonard Lopate, and I'll be in conversation with Tom Hartman on Saturday, June 8th, downstairs from WBAI Studios at the Commons Cafe on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. We'll be discussing Tom's important new book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment, and of course, we'll also be talking about radio and how it intersects with new media. And we will be happy to take your questions and comments. That's Saturday, June 8th at 7 p.m. You can go online at WBAI.org and purchase tickets to the conversation, which is a benefit for listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI. Hope to see you then.
Mavis Staples.
Anita Franco.
Railroad Earth.
The Whalers.
The Mammals.
Tom Chapin.
Tom Paxton.
And Margot Thunderbird.
Are just a few of the many performers at the Clearwater Festival on June 15th and 16th.
At Croton Point Park on the Hudson River.
You can get a full weekend pass and support WBAI at the same time with a $95 donation. That's the early bird price that's not available anywhere else but here on WBAI.
Call 516-620-3602 or go to www.givetowbai.org and put Clearwater in the search box.
See you at the festival.
There's a nutshell mystic blowing through the air.
Yes, and you are listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Alex.
Good to be back.
And Kyle.
Howdy.
Well, yeah, it is good to be back. We haven't been around for a couple of weeks. We're in the middle of a fundraiser, so that's part of the reason. Also busy with all kinds of other projects. I have to apologize to Kyle because he's the one who drove all the way in here and dealing with Waze all the way. And what I did was I recorded Waze in my voice and directed all of the comments to Kyle. So it's basically, hey, Kyle, make a left turn up ahead and also scolding you when you speed, and all kinds of things like that. So if the traffic wasn't bad enough, we just got here 2 minutes ago. The traffic wasn't bad enough. Having to deal with my voice twice over because I was also in the car, that's more than I can imagine anyone could bear.
I made the best of it, and it was a useful tool. Although something's haywire with the navigation.
It is.
Whatever systems, whatever clouds, there are some angry clouds, because nothing. It just seemed like it was always late and too. Too inaccurate for words, but right. we won't get into that. I'm sure everyone out there is suffering from
I'll
this.
Get into it. We cut across four lanes to get off the LIE, and then it said, hey, get back on the LIE after we already got on the Northern State Parkway, you know, and then penalized us 5 minutes for not doing it. So, yeah, it was very very frustrating. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about all kinds of things. Well, that is technology, I guess, but other issues involving technology, because there certainly are a lot of things happening. Also, we have some special offers to give away tonight for people who do call 516-620-3602 and pledge to support this amazing radio station, which, you know, when you're absent from it for a while, you realize how precious it is, how amazing it is. And I think the listeners of New York City would certainly realize that as well. You know, we were talking about this last time we were on the air. There's another radio station that's going off the air pretty soon in New York, turning into a different format. And we survive. We survive because our listeners keep us here. So thank you to all those people who have done that over the years, over the decades. It looks like you had something to say, Alex. That's why I'm pointing to you.
Oh, well, I always have something to say.
Okay. Well, I think it was you were basically about to say that it's really about all the listeners' support. That's what it's, you know, that's how we're here and how we've persisted.
Yeah, you had your mouth open and your finger up in the air, so I just assumed that meant you were going to say
something.
It looked
exactly like
what I...
Did
I have my finger in the air?
Maybe
you
were just testing the wind or something.
I think you might be hallucinating. Are you smelling toast or anything?
If only.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was, because I was here on time, I was sitting over in the room that is going to be our new studio with everything being built out and all the exciting new equipment being set up
lit up. We're in the old studio. What are we doing here? Yeah. We're in the wrong room.
We're still in the old studio because things aren't quite up and running in there yet, but they are so
okay,
close.
Okay, so it's not working yet.
It's not all working right. yet, but I was sitting in there and just looking around at the equipment and thinking, you know, this is, it's the listeners that built this, and it's the listeners that are still building this, because as we've said many times on these airwaves, this is the only thing that keeps us going, is asking you directly for support. We don't take paid ads. We don't tell you what brand of drinks you should drink or cars you should buy or any crap
some
like
of those,
that.
Some of those listeners want to leave, by the way, yes. The ones that are building the studio. And we're not supposed to let them out, right?
No, not yet. You know, until they think about what they've done. But it's really, you're the ones listening to this. You're the ones that have kept us doing this on this program since the 80s, on this station since the 60s. And it's really amazing. And it's a crazy experiment, and I love that it's still working. So if you go to give2wbai.org or call our pledge line at 516-620-3602, we can tell you about some premiums that you can get in return for your support.
Alex.
And to build on some of the points that you made here and also some of the points that I think Emmanuel thought I was going to make earlier but didn't, this is a station that has been embattled for many, many years. And I bring this up, I think, you know, at least once per fundraiser, but it wasn't too long ago. It was 19 years ago when this station was almost taken over by corporate interests on the Pacifica National Board. Mm-hmm. And it was the listeners that came together. It was people that organized on Long Island in the city, protests in the station itself.
Do you remember that? We were doing a show.
I do.
And there was a protest in the station at the time we were doing it.
Well, do you remember what
and,
we did?
And the cops actually showed up inside the studio to haul people away who were doing a sit-in.
And there were lots of arrests.
And we were reporting the whole thing. And by reporting it, more people were coming to the station to protest. And we were yelled at afterwards for daring to publicize it. But you know, when the cops are in the studio right in front of you, you kind of mention it.
Well, remember
that's
what
how
you
we
did.
Do radio.
Which was, you gave me your cell phone, and this was back in the days when cell phones weren't really all that common. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, 19 years ago.
I was trusting you.
You trusted me with your cell phone, which is a big mistake. In any event, you called from the station your cell phone. I went into the hallway where the massive protest was going on and put the phone right up to the NYPD's face when they were announcing that people were going to be arrested if they didn't leave. And it was that caused all of this massive amount of people and protests and people with drums to show up outside the station over on Wall Street. And that was an incredible night, but it goes to show you how important this station has been for so many years, for so many decades, to the people of the city. And think about this, too. This is a local radio station right in the middle of the dial. We can go on and on about how important that is, but what's really important is that this is a local station, but it has a national reach. It has an international reach when it comes to the podcasting and the internet. And even though we're a local station, local news and local issues are really under threat all of these local stations, local news stations, are becoming non-existent, or they're being taken over by these conservative interests. Mm-hmm. And the fact that WBAI still exists, and the fact that you can hear us talking on this radio, and you can hear Trump Watch, and you can hear all of the other wonderful programs that
local
are on
news.
WBAI.
Local news within the last hour.
Absolutely. Broadcasts of Democracy Now!, you know, where this is, you know, really the home of everything, and where it all started with Amy Goodman. That's something really, really special. That's something that needs to be protected in this day and age, almost at any cost, I would say. So please keep us on the air. Keep us going for another 50, 60, 70 years, whatever's needed. 516-620-3602.
You bring up Amy Goodman. I remember another show in 1999 that was live over this particular air slot.
The Battle
of Seattle, where Amy Goodman was being tear gassed right live on the air. As we were, you know, a lot of people were saying, Emmanuel, you should stick to the topic of the show. Now, sometimes news preempts that. And when something like that is happening, especially with a colleague, you definitely preempt whatever you have planned, and you defer to the greater issue. And that turned out to be a very pivotal moment in our nation's history. And I imagine, Kyle, you were out there, too, in 1999 at that point. That's when you were in Seattle.
Yeah, I had my my Nike swoosh on my shirt, and I was definitely supporting all the cheap products coming into the country, and mass
sipping a latte in Starbucks.
Large corporations. Yeah, I was in a Starbucks, waving at all the people smashing the windows. Now I was a student. I was very, very young. I think I had been up at a record store. I was buying vinyl that weekend.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
It couldn't be more 1990s.
I took the bus into the city, and I bought some records, and I didn't really understand what was going on. And I did have someone comment. I was wearing a shirt that did have a swoosh on it, and
when you say swoosh, what do you
a
mean?
A logo, right? And
okay.
And I got
with
called
a little
out,
swooshy
yeah.
type of thing.
I didn't know it had like I think it said soccer in Japanese or something, and someone called me out and said, you know, nice shirt, you know, but I didn't have any idea. I was like barely through high school at that point.
I get that every day. The other day I wore a shirt that says Christianity is stupid.
Well, it's really
and believe me, you're looking for trouble when you wear that outside. It's a negative land shirt.
No, and exactly, and the funny thing is that I think even in those kinds of shirts and logos and brands are less popular now. I don't know. People are not as afraid of wearing that kind of stuff now. Maybe the garment industry has changed so much that you can wear brands like that. But at the time, that was a big no-no, and I had no idea.
Well,
I was buying records.
We're more focused on getting swastikas off shirts, so I guess we'll get to the major brands later.
Yeah, I think there's other brands that are less corporate that are more of more controversial. But at the time, yeah, and that night, I think, is when all the windows got smashed. The black block was out. It was hardcore. There was tear gas everywhere.
And if I can loop this around, you also were a listener way back then.
I was a burgeoning young hacker, and I like to think I still am. But it was really formative, and I was getting involved in. I had listened to a lot of different radio in my community, but there was less good community radio at that point. But
wow, yeah, I don't hear that often. There was less good community radio in the past.
Well, it was, I would be more, I'm just saying me personally, I would have been more apt to listen to like a commercial station, maybe a late night program that not very many people listen to. I did listen to KBCS and some of the other stations for good, talk programming
but
and stuff.
But somehow you found Off the Hook.
I found Off the Hook. I did. I was, interested in, hacking and of course, our publication. And what hackers were doing, I found that really interesting because this was when the OS wars were going on, and
oh boy,
I didn't realize that there were even other operating systems like Linux and Unix, and I was really challenging myself. I wanted to get into other things that involved the command line, and it took me on a very interesting odyssey, as I think many burgeoning hackers have found themselves learning about things and being a sort of hacker a generalist of sorts.
So this drives home the point of how radio reaches people all around the world, how it affects them.
I think this was before the word podcast. The P word had not existed yet.
You know, I'm not sure.
Streaming a hacker radio
and
show.
We were one of the first to do that, but I think it was right about the time, 97, 96, that area, we were one of the first radio shows to go on the internet. I remember that. And you can listen to all of this online in the Off the Hook section of 2600.com. You can hear the shows where we experimented with real audio and we were getting phone calls from Asia. It was really amazing. And that's when we started to realize the potential of not only the internet, but of radio stations interconnecting with the internet.
I can echo some of your story, Kyle, because I too was a listener back before I met any of you guys, you know, about 100 years ago. And around that time, I remember listening to the Amy Goodman getting smoke bombed live. I remember listening to the protests here at the station live. And I was at my workplace at the time, which was I used to run an arcade. And I would play BAI on the radio there because, you know, any music would get drowned out, but you could hear talk radio. And so I'm up at the counter. I've got my little radio, usually tuned to BAI, especially during this program. And people who had just come into the establishment had, you know, would occasionally start listening with me. And it got interesting when Amy Goodman was coughing out in the middle of the road while trying to report the news and things like that. And it really, like, I think I got BAI a couple of more listeners that way because I'd get asked, what are you listening to? What is this?
Uh-huh.
And how are they allowed to talk about this stuff, hacking on the air?
There were so many moments in that one show. I remember we were hearing cops issuing commands to people, and they sounded like Darth Vader, that they were basically speaking through their gas masks. So that was what we were broadcasting over New York radio.
I mean, and another thing is it's incredible to think, and maybe a lot of our younger listeners don't realize this, but this show itself has been on the air for 31 years, I think we're coming up to. That's an incredible feat in and of itself. That's mm-hmm. That's amazing. And to build on the old Amy Goodman points, too, if I recall correctly, there was a certain president that called in to Democracy Now. Maybe it was back in 2000?
Well, he didn't intentionally call into Democracy Now! In fact, he didn't intentionally call BAI. He called a lot of radio stations and happened to have somebody take the call seriously at WBAI and hand the phone to Amy, who proceeded to ask Bill Clinton all these questions. This was election eve or election day 2000. To his credit, he stuck on the phone. He answered them. I wish he had acted like that for his presidency. He was, you know, he defended his policies and his opinion. And it was great to see somebody actually take him on because the mass media at the time was not doing that.
Well, and this speaks to the real power of WBAI as well, because if you think about a lot of the criticism that we may take is that, you know, oh, our show is too political, we're too tough on the Trump administration. Well, Amy Goodman was really, really tough that particular day on President Clinton. I remember she was asking him really tough questions about things like, you know, why isn't there a federal moratorium on the death penalty? What are you doing? You know, you're executing innocent people. Really, really tough questions. I mean, if you think about, you know, the function of WBAI right now, to go back to that point again, if this station is useless, then nobody should support it, mm-hmm. right? I mean, then it should just go to the wayside of history, just like, WPLJ or
oh, you
know,
wow. You
something
know, it's
like
too
that,
soon.
Right?
They're still on the air.
Oh, are they really? God.
Yeah. May 31st, sorry. That's their last day.
Is that right?
That doesn't really happen, though, because even if it wasn't broadcasting this stuff quote, useful, right, the Christian radio or the country station would find it useful,
oh,
right, to get
no.
their message.
Yeah,
out.
No doubt.
Well,
no
there'd
doubt.
Be a Christian or country station or country, I mean, country Christian station on the air if we did something, if we changed our format.
But the point is, it's not useless, right? There is a real function for WBAI. If you look at the political climate that we're in right now, where you have the daily mendacity of the Trump administration, the constant assaults on the very notion of the truth. We have white nationalism on the rise.
Leave Trump alone.
I'll try.
Wait, what are you saying?
Why am I even agreeing?
I'm trying new phrases. All right, that one didn't land. But just be patient with me.
I'm trying here, but
all right.
Think about it.
He's doing the best.
To go back to Trump, there's things like white nationalism on the rise. We have intolerance on the rise. Stations like WBII are needed now more than ever because what we need is dialogue. Mm-hmm. And what you get in this show and every other show on WBII is dialogue. And in fact, We are one of the Pacifica stations that doesn't play music, not like that station down in D.C. that plays jazz quite frequently.
We're criticizing other Pacifica stations now.
Why not? If it benefits us,
I'm
all
for it. Let's start an internal war. That's great. We've done it before. So.
We're making an argument for the support of WBAI. If we have to cast aspersions on other Pacifica stations, I've got no problem with that.
Cast aspersions on other stations locally. We can start with that. Then we can move on to other parts of the
country. I don't listen to any other local stations.
All right. Well, that's a start. That's good.
You know, if I could, I would. Mm-hmm. So the only other stations I know are Pacifica stations, and I'll support them too. But I'll also cast aspersions.
How about NPR stations? Why shouldn't you donate to an NPR station, get a nice little tote bag or something, instead of WBAI? I mean, yeah, do both if you can. But why is WBAI a better investment?
Oh, because we've heard All Things Considered all throughout the country. You drive around the country, and you so many times you can hear All Things Considered on every station. All this syndication, it's such nonsense. Plus, they have all this these corporate sponsors already. So we don't have that. It's very, very important for you to call 516-620-3602. Help support WBAI. Help support Off the Hook.
Explain what you mean by corporate sponsor, because that's not something that's said around here very often.
You might be able to explain this better than I could, but my understanding of it is that there are a lot of corporations that will donate large monies, and they will say this is brought to you by the this, that, and the other corporation. And even though they're not necessarily playing a commercial, you're still hearing their name over and over and over again.
They'd often operate under the guise of perhaps a corporate foundation or a family foundation that made their millions, billions, and trillions from a corporate entity who fought against environmental legislation, whatever it is. That's how they get their underwriting.
This is All Things Considered brought to you by the Trump Foundation. Because
sure.
That's exactly the kind of organization you just described.
A good altruistic, they made their money in the marketplace.
And they want to donate to something.
They just want to give back.
Tax write-off?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't do that. We don't do that. We go on the air and we say Trump Foundation sucks. We say Verizon sucks. We say AT&T sucks. We say we can say anything because they're not sponsoring us. One thing we will not say our listeners suck, because they don't.
However, there is one point to be clarified.
Yes.
Is that if you do donate to WBAI, let's say you do want to donate, I don't know, a couple $1,000s right now, maybe $500,000.
That would shut us up.
It would shut us up. We'd stop right now. We'd just get on with it. But my understanding is it is a tax deductible donation, so that's a good thing for you. You never know when you're going to need a deduction from your annual income. So think about that. But we don't accept these huge tax-free donations from major corporations. We're not constantly saying their name. The only name of a corporate entity that you're probably going to hear over and over again is, like Kyle mentioned, the Trump Organization here, and not necessarily in the best light.
Probably not. Okay, well, we might as well, since we've gone into this, tell people what we're offering tonight, because maybe people want to get something really cool in exchange for their donation of $100 to 516-620-3602. If you simply ask for the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription, what you will get is an incredible library of history and also future news, because this is a lifetime subscription to 2600 digitally. In the form of the Hacker Digest. Now, what that means is we go back to volume 1 from 1984 and give you a PDF of all of the issues that came out then, and do the same thing for every volume that came after that. I think we're up to, 34 now? We have been releasing them every 3 months, and we're about to finish doing that. In fact, in the summertime, I think the very last one will be released from the back issues, and you'll have it a complete full library up until the present, which is fantastic and amazing, and it's an incredible resource. Every year has some amazing bit of history, and what we have done, we've basically put the thing together and analyzed each issue, described what's been going on at that particular point in history, and as well as what all the covers mean, all the covers of 2600 Magazine. A lot of people have asked us that over the years. There have been so many covers. So this is your way of finding out what was behind the thinking of that, and also what was happening in the hacker world, in the technological world, through the eyes of 2600 Magazine. That is yours for a pledge of $100, 516-620-3602. One caveat, you do need to have an email address, because we need to email you this. And you have to be able to accept large files. By large files, I mean something on the order of 20 megabytes. Most serious email providers, that's not a problem for. And if you are having trouble with that, we'll work something out. We'll figure it out. We've done that in the past. But this is something we're only offering during this fund drive. It's something that we normally let go for much more than this, and it's quite popular. But for the WBAI pledge drive, for Off the Hook listeners, we are offering this for $100, a lifetime of the Hacker Digest. You get everything from the past and everything into the future. However long the future lasts, we can't predict. 516-620-3602. Ask for the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription. You can also go to give2wbai.org and look up the same thing. But again, supplies are limited, and this is only for WBAI listeners.
And I should point out that for people familiar with getting scanned versions of like old magazines or books or whatnot, this is not just a simple scan of the old issues. This is like everything's been gone into, made sure everything's readable, everything's spelled right, there's no crappy OCR mistakes, things like that. This is a serious undertaking and a real look into what made these issues special and a real archival effort.
And you can zoom in a lot because it's done at really high quality, so you can see those microscopic messages that are sometimes hidden.
I would just clarify this is the best quality, but I would say it's the first pass. We reserve the right. We may remaster, we may reconfigure, we may repackage. But what we've been doing is creating and going back and digitizing all of our corpus, the entirety of the back issues, into a digital form that is portable, and an added perspective, as Rob was saying, that describes some of the stuff, and then of course it's of a certain quality level that you can like zoom in and check it all out, and we wanted to get this prepared in a way so that it was all in one place for people, and we're doing that specifically for this fundraising effort, and we're going to get that sent out to you for this pledge level.
Now, I've got a laptop here. This laptop actually has increased in value quite a bit because I've loaded all of the existing digest onto it. So this is a laptop that is fully stocked with 2600 back issues. And what I'm asking people to do is to pick a volume. We currently, I believe, we've released volumes 1 through 22, I think, and 25 through 34. So there's a slight gap, which we're filling this year. And we'll be completely up to date. So pick a year, double-click on it. You'll open up a PDF, and maybe you could tell us something about what happens during that year, because every volume has a big description at the beginning, and that description tells what has been happening in that particular year. It also says things about the magazine, such as this is a year that we changed our format or changed our typeface or had a horrible typo on this particular page, all kinds of fun stories that you can only find out if you are a subscriber to the Hacker Digest. And by becoming a lifetime subscriber to the Hacker Digest by pledging to 516-620-3602, you're getting all this for the best deal possible. And it's something that you will treasure for forever, I think. They're completely non-DRM copies. You can trade them. You can put them on multiple systems. You can read them on multiple devices. They are very portable, and they will last forever. Now, Kyle, did you pick a year? Did you pick a volume?
Oh yeah, no. I've been looking at the autumn issue of 1988, and this particular article I found pretty interesting. It's called "Crawling into Manholes."
That's an article, "Crawling into Manholes." All
yeah,
right.
I mean, this wasn't a particular event of the year, but this is information, and I would venture to say it's probably still relevant today. They haven't really changed manhole technology that much. But did you know that round manhole covers are round so that the lineman doesn't accidentally drop the cover into the manhole?
Wait, say that again. The what's it's
round manhole covers
right.
are round so that a lineman can't accidentally drop the cover down the hole.
Well, aren't they round because the hole is round?
These are all good questions.
Make more sense?
Wow. No, I understand that. It's not going to fall through the hole.
These covers.
Yeah, but it wouldn't go in the hole if it wasn't round. It wouldn't fit.
It only fits when it's horizontal. It's not going to drop
down.
It
has a ledge. It has a lip on it.
See, these are some of the things I don't get, but there's always things that you don't get in various issues.
Right. So even if it's perpendicular, the edge, the lip that it sits on would not allow the entirety of that round object to fall through in any orientation.
All right.
But I just wanted to read a little excerpt here that goes on to say that these covers are the same as the standard B, A, and SA type covers once the bolts are removed, because they often have a type C and D manhole that has these locking bolts. So there's several different types of the manhole covers. So these are the same ones without the bolts. And the best way to open the cover is to use a manhole cover lifter.
Wait, we tell people how to open a manhole cover?
Yeah. Wow. The tool is called the Defiance Corp PTS-49 or a B-type manhole cover lifter, although an ordinary 3/4 to 1-inch crowbar hook side can be used. Put the tool into one of the rim slots and press down on the bar until the hook is pressing up against the cover flange. Then push or lift the cover a few inches up and slide it off the hole. You can use a bent sprinkler turnoff wrench on the other side to lift if there are two of you. You should have no problem with two people.
I would hope there'd be two of you if you're lifting manhole covers off.
Although it can be done alone, provided you are strong enough. One must use good sense when entering a manhole.
One must use good sense when starting this whole thing. But that just gives you an idea of the kinds of things that we talk about. Nothing is off limits. It's amazing that I didn't even remember this article. What year was that from, Kyle?
1988.
That was 1988. Wow.
Yeah, that would be volume 5, I believe.
We've been going through a lot of this because we want to make it look as good as possible. And we have found things in old issues. And this is true. An internet address, a URL that is pretty interesting. I just tried entering it to see if it was still there, this amazing security hole. It was. It's still there. Not only is it still there, it's updating. It's been updating all this time. And even printing it in our magazine apparently wasn't enough to get it turned off. So you'll find things like that. You'll find these amazing holes you can drive a car through. You'll also just find a lot of theory that still works, still is relevant today. Plus, you also find history. You'll find antiquated things that you couldn't even imagine, such as, wired telephone networks and blue boxing and things like that, all documented, all basically illustrated by hackers, described in ways that are completely priceless and invaluable. That is for a pledge of $100, 516-620-3602, the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription. Limited time, limited availability, but it is an incredible value. Now, Rob, you have the laptop now. What I'm going to ask you to do is double-click on a volume, and you'll find we have new covers for all of these, by the way. We have four covers for every issue that comes out every year, but then every digest, we have a special cover for that year that we've just put in this particular project. And after that is a long description of everything that happened and everything that changed in the issue. If you find something interesting in there, that's what I would ask you to focus on. Or if you find, as Kyle did, an article that you think is of particular interest, but there's just so many articles, you'll be looking for a long, long time. Do you need more time? We can talk about other things while you're perusing.
Well, I've just clicked on the digest from 2004, it looks
like. All right.
And on the front, it's got a nice cover issue of people wearing T-shirts of the covers from that year, followed by a little description here. The 2004 cover format started the tradition of themes that lasted for the entire year. Uh-huh. The autumn issue was again labeled as fall in 2004. Interesting.
Yeah, we had a big thing where sometimes it was called autumn and sometimes it was called fall. And mm-hmm. Not sure how that happened. I think we eventually worked it out so it would be called autumn, and we stuck with that, but there was a transitional period there.
I like it. It's fancy. Little messages were found in page 3, hidden in tiny print within the contents.
You can find out what all the messages are, all the secret messages that you might not even have known were there.
Yeah, I have that answer in front of me, but I'm not going to read it. I'm going to let people find this out for themselves because it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And one of those little Easter eggs that turned up every so often. It's got the titles of the letters section, which is something else that changes every issue.
Yes, we never use the same title for the letters column, yeah, the letters or columns, the editorial or the table of contents.
Letters columns in spring were mind exercises. In summer, it was verbal constructs. In fall, it was troublemakers, very apt. And in winter, it was back and forth.
All of that describes our letters.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of two-word headings.
Yeah. The 2004 covers all had propaganda poster themes. Each issue had an image with a jingoistic phrase
printed
on the bottom. With the exception of winter, each of these images was modified from an actual propaganda poster.
I bet one of these is We Need More Blue Boxes, the U.S. Army war poster. Yeah, they've got artillery or ordnance boxes that are blue and modified.
So much fun with the covers. So much amazing artwork has gone into them over the years.
Yeah, and as noted here, the cover design for all four issues was credited to Dabu Kwald, I think. How does he pronounce that? But yeah.
I think it's Dabu Kwald.
Dabu Kwald. Okay.
That's how I always say it when I see it. But, you know, who knows? That's the nature of handles.
Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia. That's what I have to say.
Interesting dude. But, the spring cover showed a soldier in the midst of a battle carrying a bluish box containing point-detonating M46 fuses. The message at the bottom says, "The armor needs more blue boxes," which was a reference to the blue boxes of Frone Freaks, as we know. But, yeah, it goes on like that. And it just, these are some of the little, nice behind-the-scenes peeks into what goes into the decisions that make up this magazine, the design behind it, little notes about what was going on that year, stuff from The Fifth Hope. As I'm scrolling down in this, and this is all in the new section that wasn't in the original magazines. It's us looking back now at what was going on and what these covers signify.
Sort of an interpretation of the contents and some of the little known parts of the issue, attributes of it that were special.
One of the things that I've always appreciated about all of the issues, but I think now looking at them historically, would be extraordinarily interesting for people to look back to the 80s and the 90s and look at the marketplaces at the back of the issues all the time and see what people were selling way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all archived in here. You know, people selling crystals that you can use to modify a Radio Shack tone dialer,
make
a red box, things like that.
Okay, you said incredible. A lot there. Radio Shack, okay, it used to be a store that sold cool things. I miss it a lot. Tone dialers, they were things you would hold up to telephones because, well, a lot of people used rotary dial and they didn't have touch tones. They didn't have a touch tone phone, so these little tone dials allowed you to send touch tones through the actual mouthpiece of the phone. Also, it worked on pay phones because sometimes they cut off the touch tones after you connected. But we also discovered, and this was discovered in our pages, that they could be modified. These Radio Shack tone dials could be modified to emit a special frequency at a special pace that would emulate a quarter being dropped into the telephone. They're called red boxes, and this was the famous Radio Shack tone dialer converter project. It got to the point where kids walking into Radio Shack buying these tone dialers were given the third degree, and sometimes the sale was refused outright because Radio Shack knew damn well what they were up to. Also, it resulted in the entire phone network, the entire Bell system having to redesign all of their payphones because of this. So it's no small change the kinds of things that we have been up to over the years. A lot of history. And the funny thing is that now we're the ones preserving the payphones and the phone booths and the phone trucks. The phone companies couldn't care less about it. They moved on to the next thing, which doesn't sound nearly as good as the old connections. In fact, I have a letter here from a listener, which I think is kind of apropos. Dear Off the Hook, thanks for your excellent show. On March 12th, 2018, Verizon entered into a settlement resulting from an investigation by then-Attorney General Eric Schneiderman over Verizon's failure to maintain its copper network. Verizon agreed to fix failing copper networks. The settlement with Verizon required the company to repair 54 central offices across the state, replace bad cable, defective equipment, faulty backup batteries, etc. On March 8th, Janet Gasly Martin, Verizon Director of Network Transformation in New York City, sent me a letter stating that the copper network in Hunters Point, Long Island City, will no longer be available after April 22, 2019. My services will be suspended if I don't set up an appointment to transfer to Fios by June 2019. I set up a June appointment to avoid termination of service. Prior to this, I had been able to maintain my setup for a year by calling Verizon Network Management and getting my name onto a refused migration list. a refused migration list. Sounds like something Trump would make, but no, it's a totally different meaning. I was unable to do so this time because they said my central office was shifting to Fios. I called the PSC, Public Service Commission, to file a complaint, but they did so reluctantly, informing me that the FCC approved the migration from copper to Fios. I contacted the Attorney General's office today for their input and help regarding getting Verizon to honor the copper network settlement and respect our right to choose DSL and copper. I am waiting for a response. Please help us and other New York residents maintain our copper wired landlines and DSL. Signed, Adele. Thank you, Adele, for that wonderful letter. Unfortunately, it looks like that is where we are going, getting rid of copper, which I think is a mistake. I think it's a mistake to completely cut off from the old technology and just embrace the new, which has its faults, has its shortcomings. We have outlined them repeatedly on this program. And when you lose power, oftentimes you lose your phone very soon afterwards with the new technology, not so with the old technology. And there's all kinds of other issues that make one preferable over the other. But why not have both?
Yeah, and this is one of those issues that if you're not familiar with this, if it doesn't affect you, you might think, oh, what's the harm in just switching everything over? But we on this program have heard by email and by phone calls to the station from multiple people who are affected by this, who either can't upgrade or they're older people who don't want to upgrade to something that they don't fully understand, or they're people in areas that can't upgrade because that's the infrastructure just isn't there wherever they are. It's a real problem that affects real people.
Yeah, and in particular, this person has mentioned DSL, and you know, some people aren't happy with a lot of the broadband plans out there. They don't want to use wireless or Wi-Fi or any of the cellular modems or models, and they don't necessarily want to jump to like a Fios or another broadband. They're happy with a couple megs that they get through DSL. And, you know, when you start moving to these other plans, their base bottom plan for a couple megs is like 50, you know, and so you end up paying like a premium for data that some users, they're not necessarily Luddites, like they're not elderly, although they have, you know, their own affection for the landline and in and of themselves, but maybe someone who doesn't really need all of that bandwidth and is happy with paying a reasonable amount for their broadband because it's just enough to get online to do the basic things that they need to do. They're completely engaged and online and interested in technology, but they don't want to be robbed. They don't want to be paying for all of this excess capacity that personally they don't necessarily have a use for.
Also, the complete argument around infrastructure has changed because there aren't really telephone companies anymore. The telephone service is now something that you get bundled in if you get the right cable TV service or digital television subscriptions. And switching to something like that then opens you up to having to pay for TV you don't watch or getting pressured to throw more things in on your deal. And there are no providers right now whose job it is to just make sure you can use the telephone.
Yeah, this is the broader issue of consolidation in media, but also the consumer protections, the fact that it isn't regulated in the way that a utility of years past was. The private entities, the cellular companies themselves are not at all looked at in the way a public switch telephone network operator would have been in the
day. You had to be able to get a phone line. That is how it worked. No matter how far away you were from a city, no matter how remote your house was, you were guaranteed to have a phone. It was a utility. You don't get those kind of guarantees with a cell phone. That's for damn sure. And you certainly don't get the same kind of quality. And to expect people to just give up those guarantees of the past and move into something that it has its advantages, but it also has its shortcomings. And just embrace all that and accept it without any kind of feedback. That is a big mistake. And we are constantly pointing that out in various forums.
And it's a real loss to people because, and I think this is encapsulated in the digest pages really quite well, because having access to the telephone network, especially in the 80s and the 90s, allowed you access to this worldwide network that you could begin to explore. And for a lot of hackers and phone freaks back in the day, when you going back to Redboxing, this was part of our upbringing. This was part of what made us the lunatics that we are today, still doing a radio show, like, you know, some of us doing a radio show every week for 31 years. Who can imagine, you know, such craziness going on? But it really was such a form of access to something that was so worldwide way before the internet. And the importance of that can't be underestimated. And it really comes through in the pages, not only of the Digest, but of every single issue that you're going to get if you pledge $100 and call 516-620-3602, support off the hook. Interestingly enough, by the way, we were talking about Redboxing, and I was just pinged by an old friend of mine and a current listener right now who asked me a question about whether the statute of limitations has run on Redboxing. And the answer, my good friend, is yes, it certainly has. It would probably be a 6-year statute of limitations.
Plus, the companies don't exist anymore, most of them.
Well, yeah, well, they're in one form or another, they're still there. I mean, remember, there was New York Telephone, then it was 9X, then it was Bell Atlantic, then it was Verizon, and then we had Verizon really sucks, and VerizonEatsPoop.com, and Verizon should spend more time fixing its networks and less money on lawyers.com.
I don't know how you remember all these, but yes.
Because, I used to operate them, right, way back in the day, a product of my misspent youth. But getting access to the telephone company, to go back to another Redbox story, I remember I was probably 15 years old. It might have been like 1994. I skateboarded up to a shopping center on Long Island.
You were trouble.
I was trouble.
I mean, you were.
I was trouble. Yeah. I was certainly trouble. I mean, nothing's changed. I've gone from bad to worse. I became a lawyer. So in any event, I Redboxed
a phone
call.
You're still trouble, actually.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
I just realized that.
That is still a good point. The best lawyers are, I have to say. There's still trouble. But I Redboxed a call to one of my favorite authors at the time, who was Bruce Sterling. I tracked him down to where he lived in Austin, Texas, and I called him on Thanksgiving Day using a Redbox.
He must have been thrilled.
He was thrilled, as a matter of fact. Actually, we spent about 2 hours on the phone.
Okay, yeah, you know, Bruce is an interesting person, so yeah. I could definitely see him.
And to this day, we're still in contact. We've never actually met in real life, but it was using the telephone system that, you know, and a Redbox that allowed me to make that connection. Rob, you wanted to say something.
Oh, yeah, I just I want the listeners to hear something, and then I'll explain what
it is.
You're
not going to Redbox over the air, are you?
Not as such, no, but that's me with something I pulled out of my wallet, which I've been carrying around for very many years. This is my last 6.5536 crystal from the Redboxing days.
And that wasn't his head he was hitting.
No, nope, in your wallet?
I have it in my wallet.
Why do you have that in your wallet?
The posts on the crystal are long since broken away. Most of the print is rubbed off the casing of this thing. But I keep it around as a reminder of those fun old days spent phone freaking and doing things that I maybe wasn't expected to with bits of technology.
I still have a 3.5-inch floppy that I carry with me. So I guess I could understand that. I need to get something off of it, though. That's why I'm carrying it
around.
That
could be misinterpreted. Well, be careful.
I think the spirit is definitely, it's still there. And what Alex had said, that it made me think of, you know, why are we doing this? Why do we continue to talk about these things? And I think it's really about creating understanding, because the curiosity that came from the 80s and the 90s, it's across the board. It's still there, but people may not be aware of the historical significance of things like the crystal involved in the red boxes or some of these other infrastructure or tech-related areas. And by continuing to talk about it and ask questions, I think we create understanding and we ask more questions about what we're presented with today. And the more people that are interested, the more people that get curious, that ask questions themselves, that are listening and trying to understand the things around them that seem so ubiquitous and so mysterious, I think that the better off we are as a society, because people are then equipped to not be at the mercy of these tools and technologies, but rather they can master them. They can know what is going on and how it is being wielded or not, or how they themselves can wield it and really be better for it. And the more people that understand that, and I think that's the real importance of broadcasting at WBAI, is that a lot of people can hear it. A lot of people, they may not know exactly what we're talking about, but they can always go and search nowadays. They can find out more. They can just read one of these issues and get really interested in something historical, and then imagine for themselves what's going on today, what replaced that, and go down their own rabbit holes of curiosity. And I think that's the real benefit that we provide by doing the show and offering information like this.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, because a lot of people over the years have said, yeah, I love the magazine, but I don't understand most of it. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that nobody understands all of it. We don't understand everything. People who write things might not understand a different article. The important thing is to be accessible, to be able to speak to people in terms that they get the general idea. And I think that's what we try to do with the magazine. We try to do that with the radio show. We try to do that with the conferences. And I think that is how you bridge the gaps in technology. Yes, Alex.
You know, to build on everything that you are saying, Kyle's saying, Rob's saying, you know, about the historical nature of all this and its significance, to take it one step further, I think there's also so many parallels with what's happening today when you look back in these historical pages. And I want to read something from Volume 3 of the Digest.
Volume 3,
1986.
1986. Okay.
This is from the Digest. Surveillance and the NSA were hot topics in our pages.
1986.
With concern being expressed as to what the secretive agency might actually be up to. The abuse of metadata by the authorities in the form of warrantless pen register info was another hot topic. We noted with interest and suspicion the NSA's attempts to get rid of the data encryption standard algorithm DES and replace it with something of their own. We saw the first use of electronic fingerprints and how they could be used to hunt people down nationwide. Something that had been previously inconceivable. What foreshadowing, let me say.
1986. Wow. That's just a taste of the kinds of things that you'll see that spelled out the future, and that might spell out the future even today with more current issues. All yours for a pledge of $100. You get everything that's been printed, everything that will be printed in PDF format emailed to you. 516-620-3602. Ask for the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription. Pledges only $100. 516-620-3602, or go to give2wbai.org. This will only be offered during this fund drive.
And we're here on the radio, and a lot of people don't think about radio the way they used to in the past, as a medium, basically. People in general might think, oh, things are going toward everything digital, everything online. But if you think about it, phones in this country are now pretty much digital. There's no analog left. Television in this country is digital. There's no analog left. I think we might be the one mass medium that's still around that's broadcasting and on the analog bands, and in a way that you could turn on a radio that your grandparents had generations ago and listen to us on it. Any radio that they make in the future, you could listen to the same airwaves as we're pulsing away in times past. Like this is a bit of old infrastructure that exists and that is still so vital to so many people. There are people who listen to us on the airwaves who don't have access to anything digital. And we have to keep that going, and we've been kept going for 60 years almost now.
It's more 15, than 60 years, right? No, it's almost 60 years.
Yeah, 59 years this year. And
the radio station, 1960, is when it went on.
We started in 1960, and as I said, the only thing that's kept us going is you, the listener. So if you go to give2wbai.org or call 516-620-3602, you can pledge for the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription for $100, or you could pledge any amount you're comfortable with. Every little bit helps, and every little bit goes to keeping the lights on around here and keeping us doing what we're doing. You could also become a BAI buddy, which lets you set any amount you like to automatically donate every month. To give us something of a predictable income, which is amazing in the nonprofit sector. So go to give2wbai.org or call 516-620-3602 and keep us doing what we're doing.
So what do you guys think about this? A bill sponsored by Brooklyn Assemblyman Felix Ortez prohibits pedestrians from crossing the road at any point while using any portable electronic device. A fine for doing so would be from $25 to $50 for a first offense, up to $100 for a second offense, and $250 for a third offense within 18 months. Exceptions include texting the police, fire department, hospital, or a physician's office or a health clinic. The text of the law states that using means viewing, so presumably people would still be able to talk on the phone while they cross the street. Now, that bill died in the Assembly last year, but this year, Queens State Senator John Liu has adopted it into the Senate. I've gotten more than my share of complaints from constituents about the problem and the suggestion that there ought to be a law, including from parents who don't want their kids texting while they're walking, much less while they're crossing the street. I don't know, Alex, as our resident lawyer, what do you think about this?
I mean, look, it's certainly a problem, and I think that we're all guilty of the vices that we preach against to go back to the Parsons tale and the Canterbury Tales. And but in any event, I think that look, it's a big problem, but I don't necessarily think the answer is legislation here. Because of these exceptions, it's going to be very, very difficult to enforce. People are going to be really angry about it. If you get a ticket, it's going to be, you know, you're going to be, you know, angry about this, you know, it just seems like it is designed to generate additional tax revenue for the city in a very selective manner. It will probably be enforced selectively, probably against minorities and not necessarily in Manhattan. I can imagine more tickets being issued in the Bronx and Washington Heights and all these places where there's already selective enforcement of the criminal laws. And so I also see it as somewhat problematic because we don't necessarily need a legislative solution to something that just requires common sense.
Yeah, okay, but how do you make common sense become something cool?
Common,
again?
Something common,
something that people want to do.
Well, I think we should just, you know, shun people that do idiotic things like walk across the street while they're texting. Or
shun people.
Give
how do we as a society shun people?
You could give someone a bad look. You don't necessarily need to issue them a ticket.
I mean, people bad looks by default. That doesn't work.
Well, you know, it's because I've been dealing with it for 25 years. So it's like, you know, I've become immune to it. It's like I've got a vaccine.
As will everybody else. So,
well, sure. Of course, I guess, you know. But look, on the other hand, if it discourages people from doing it, maybe it'll save a life, right? I mean, who knows? But my problem with this is it seems very paternalistic. It seems like the state reaching into our private lives yet again and trying to control our actions when we should be able to correct that ourselves. We don't need a legislature to tell us what to do on something that basic and that simple and that commonsensical.
I think the manufacturers and the carriers could have a little bit more activity here, and they're already talking about some of this stuff, like having limitations, especially for young students and people that may be getting consumed by all this stuff. But how hard would it be to make it so that if a phone is moving, like it can detect someone walking, to make it so that it's harder to look at a screen while moving? I mean, there's simple little things like that that could be a part of the user interface.
Well, but this is only for crossing a street, right? Not for walking and texting. You could still do that on a sidewalk or you know, or pacing around your backyard or something.
Again, maps. I mean, there's so much already on that sensor-wise and in the device, but that's just one idea. My main question when you mention this, though, is where will that revenue go? You know, what exactly is that going to fund? Is that going to fund, you know, better markings or maybe some signage to remind people that it's a bad idea to be looking down? Not that common sense shouldn't play a part, but, you know, things like that. Or is it just kind of a blanket way to just get more revenue? And I also agree. I think it'd be misapplied wholesale, just another way to target people and, you know, just like broken taillight kind of situations.
How about people on bikes texting? Can we do something about that? Yeah. It just annoys me when I see it because you really need to be paying attention on a bike. You really do. You can't be texting. You can't be doing that.
Well,
I appreciate that people have the skill to do that, but, you know, it just takes a second, you know, a single stone, a single pothole.
Oh, and these are people that are on city bikes with no helmets, with headphones in, texting at the same time. I mean, it drives me crazy as somebody who cycles all the time to see this happening. But to go back to Kyle's point, where's the revenue going to go? We also have to remember, even if this does generate a significant amount of revenue, there's also going to be a cost to the city for enforcing it and then dealing with the legal system as well, because these tickets are going to be contested. With the amount of exceptions that they're planning on building into this, there's going to be plenty of people trying to wiggle out of these tickets, and that's going to take a toll on the legal system itself. It could potentially overburden an already overburdened criminal justice system with these idiotic violations.
I would go further. I mean, I agree with the texting on a bicycle is wholly dangerous, and just it's a really bad idea on any road. If you're bicycling, you should focus on your bicycle ride and enjoy the bicycle ride. How I would go further would be headphones. I think people with earbuds in while they're cycling, I know you're exercising and whatever, and it gets you in the zone and all that, but is incredibly dangerous, especially if you're commuting and you're on roads. You should be able to hear cars coming up behind you. You should have all of your, as many of your sensory organs focused on the environment so that you have situational awareness and you can, you know, dive out of the way and protect yourself and others.
So instead of saying this is a bad idea, we're coming in with all kinds of other examples of how people should be penalized.
They're already illegal in driving. Like, you can't have earbuds in while you drive. Why on a bicycle?
You can't text while you drive either. You can't even talk on the phone with a handheld device. I don't know. I hear the point of maybe legally isn't the way to go about it. Maybe some way of technologically addressing the issue, but also just getting people to want to do something that is smart and common sense.
Yeah, I think kind of with what Alex was saying about shunning. I mean, maybe not shunning. That's a bit aggressive. But I think definitely behaviorally, we should
look. I don't think we shun enough. But okay.
Well, I just want to say we should look inward. We should, you know, have some introspection in our social, you know, broader social behaviors. What's acceptable and what isn't. I think things eventually they fall out of fashion. People realize when they go into a meeting they should probably put their phone in silent. You know, these things in movie theaters, all these things become conditioned over time, and we just really need to keep the discussion going and be aware.
I came up with an idea. Cell phone jammers at all intersections. All right?
I'm in favor.
Solve so many problems. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Again, pledge 516-620-3602. Ask for the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription. Go to give2wbai.org, give the number 2wbai.org. Hacker Digest lifetime subscription. We will see you again next time. In the meantime, please support WBAI and keep listening to what's going on and sharing it with us. Have a good night.
This is David Amram. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, and keep on listening.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York. I'm Catherine Davis, and we're about to listen to one of my favorite programs being offered to you right now, and that is a special with Chris Howard offering his Transformational Hypnosis Webinar. And it is 20 sessions by webinar in which you're going to be learning to do this process and getting your certificate so that you can go out there and work on yourself and work on others. The program started Monday, May 20th and goes on for 19 more sessions. So you can still make that pledge and get right in at the top of the program and enjoy this very special offer. So as you listen, remember that you'll be able to get whatever was missed by video In fact, everyone gets a video after every session, after every class. So make that pledge. The number 516-620-3602. And stay tuned for Chris Howard talking about transformational hypnosis.
By the water, come on and join me. I'll be waiting.
And welcome. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis, and we are being joined today by the one and the only Chris Howard, and he's going to be talking to us about how to transform our lives. If you're doing something that does not bring you joy, if you are working in a dead-end job, or not to your full capacity, we're going to talk about how to change that. Are you someone who wants to transform and maybe help other people change their lives? We're going to give you an opportunity to do that as well. And Chris Howard, for the past 20 years, has been coaching and mentoring people worldwide, helping them master tools for accelerating human transformation. And he got started in the field of personal and professional development, teaching clinical hypnosis throughout North America. And he has gone deeply into this process of hypnosis, and he's been able to use these techniques and these teachings to uplift his own life, and he is here to help us after helping so many millions of people around the world. Hello and welcome, Chris, back to WBAI.
Awesome, Catherine. So good to be with you here. Nice to have a great connection.
I want to get people acquainted with you. So let us know how you were able to shift with your own career using this work, how you got into it, and how it helped you to reach such an expansive audience.
So right out of high school, I went and I worked for a company called Club Med for about 6 years. And I worked my way up in the management there and traveled around the world. And I was a sports instructor. So I taught windsurfing and sailing and all sorts of fun stuff like that, and did the entertainment at night. And when I came back to the U.S., I was 24 years old, had never balanced a checkbook in my life, had missed this whole portion of life where people actually learned how to make their lives work. You know, all my meals had been provided for me. There was maid service. So I never really learned how to make my life work. And I dove into the books out of desperation more than anything else and started studying personal development, really in an effort to get on track from a financial perspective, in an effort to make my relationships work. And I knew that I was capable of so much more than I was exhibiting at the time. And I'm sure as you're listening now that you may find yourself in the same place where you know you have so much more potential than you're currently exhibiting. And so it was for that reason I dove into the books and then started taking seminar after seminar after seminar. And eventually I poured enough good stuff in that good stuff started coming out. And I ended up getting trained in neurolinguistics and neurolinguistic programming and becoming certified and becoming a trainer, and actually started with clinical hypnosis was the first step in the path to that. And then I started teaching. And when I got into it, I felt like if I could learn how to make other people's lives work, then surely I'd be able to make my own life work. And it kind of followed in that line of thought. And I started coaching other people, and the coaching practice started to grow and grow. And the rest is history. And it was really through continually pouring my energy in a consistent direction and personal development that eventually the floodgates flew wide open. I was rewarded tremendously. But what I find about this path, as you would know for sure, is that not only are there financial rewards, but the other rewards are infinitely more powerful. You know, the rewards from a relationship perspective and from a self-improvement perspective. So it was one of the smartest decisions I ever made to get on this path, that's for sure.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you because you're in Bali, not me. So I have to say that to be able to have a kind of profession where you can given modern technology, you can do it from anywhere in the world, is a very powerful thing. There are probably some people who don't quite know what hypnosis is and might think it's some kind of parlor trick, but there's a real phenomena of the brain that is involved with hypnosis. Can you explain to us how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is that where most people get their ideas is from stage shows and movies, and they see what appears when they they see hypnosis, typically what we see is a bunch of people that appear to be doing things that they don't want to do, but there's nothing further from the truth. I always explain to people that hypnosis is actually the ultimate state of self-control, because when you can control your mind to the point where you can attract people and resources and opportunities, give yourself suggestions that you can increase your wealth, that's ultimate control. When you can control your mind to the point where you can tell your body to shut off the pain and it does, that's control. When you can tell your body to heal itself and it does, that's control. So hypnosis is actually about learning to use your own mind to facilitate transformation in your life. In the state of California, the law books say that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. And the reason why it says that is because even if you've got an outside person facilitating the hypnosis for you, being the tour guide for you, it's not what they say or what they do that creates the change within you. It's what you do with what they say. It's how you use your imagination when you're being led through hypnosis that actually facilitate the transformation. So it's always within the individual. And hypnosis is not about robbing someone of their control. It's rather about teaching somebody to be in total control of their mind. And so that's what I do through hypnosis. And it's closely akin to meditation. Meditation, we're given, like if you do something like transcendental meditation, you're given a mantra, which is a meaningless word that you say over and over again. And it's not about the word itself. It's about the reminder to be in a space of no thought. So anytime a thought enters your mind, like in transcendental meditation, you remind yourself with a mantra to go back into the space of no thought. So the major difference between meditation and hypnosis is in the intention. In most meditation, the intention is to slip into the gap or go into the void or go into that space of no thought. Whereas in hypnosis, you have an intention that you're going to directionalize your meditation around. For example, increasing your income, doubling your income if you like, or landing your dream job, or nailing the audition, or weighing your ideal weight. So it's like a channeled meditation purely around that intention. And what we can do, and what we did do, is we teach hypnosis and teach it at various levels. We then teach you how to utilize that meditation to your greatest capacity, because you can program in certain behaviors, you know, like based on a cue or a trigger point. So for example, every time you see the Burger King sign, you feel full, or you have a ferocious desire for fresh fruits and vegetables that will satiate your hunger in every way. So you can program in cues and trigger points that will create different responses from the past responses. But it's all about empowerment. And I think that's where, when people really begin to realize what hypnosis really is and how we can use it, there's no limit to what you can do as a human being. There's no limit to your potential, and hypnosis can help you set all that free.
I did a little research on this, and what was interesting to me is that what came up was the Mayo Clinic, and under their patient care and health information, tests and procedures, they list hypnosis. It says hypnosis has been studied, pain control, hot flashes, behavior changes, cancer treatment side effects, and mental health conditions. That's a pretty good endorsement for what hypnosis can do. Let's talk a bit about the work that you're teaching people, because we are offering all of you who are tuned in today to become part of a transformational hypnosis certification program. It's on a webinar, so you'll be able to do it from wherever you are, whatever city, whatever state. If you're listening to this, you can call and make that pledge for the transformational hypnosis certification webinar. And our number is 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, and we are offering it to you for your pledge of $197, which is incredible value when, once you begin to hear what is involved in this program, you'll understand even more. For your pledge of $197, call and make that pledge for the Transformational Hypnosis Certification Webinar. 516-620-3602. So, Chris, you've been teaching this, traveling to cities generally and setting up shop and inviting people in, which really limits the number of people who might be able to travel to wherever you might be. Explain to us what this program entails.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, this is so convenient for anybody. For as you're listening here, it's being taught over 20 sessions with me live. And at the height of things, as I was traveling around the planet teaching programs, my hourly rate rate rose to $10,000 an hour. Here you're getting 20 hours with me, and it's in a group environment. You're going to be on with students all over the world, so we'll have people from all over the place. You'll be partnering up with people, working through processes, learning how to use hypnosis both to help other people transform their lives, as well as how to use self-hypnosis to transform just about any problem in your own life that you could possibly imagine. So it's really an all-purpose self-improvement technology. The program is comprised of multiple components. So there's multiple different segments that we teach throughout the training to give you a total and comprehensive education in hypnosis. So you're going to be learning, amongst many things, my 8-step model for transformational hypnosis. So that's 8 simple steps. It's a complete blueprint for facilitating transformation with most anyone for virtually any type of issue. Now, there's a scope of practice that we have to stay within. If you're not a licensed psychologist or a licensed therapist or medical doctor, there are certain things that you have to stay within in terms of your scope of practice, but we go over that. You'll be able to work with things from performance enhancement for sports to helping people double their income, to helping people improve their memory, to helping people improve their memory, to helping people improve their memory. You'll be learning how to do pain control. There's so many things that we cover in here, and I do demonstrations throughout the course. You might be a demonstration subject, or you might watch the demonstrations and listen to the dialogue that occurs, get a feeling for how you'll do it when you go into it with someone. But I'll be demonstrating things like financial success and weight loss and pain control, things like that. But it can be used with anything. But one of the things that we'll look at is so that you have a deeper understanding of what hypnosis is we'll actually break down hypnotic stage shows and take a look at how do they work, what makes them work. Stage shows are kind of interesting because